I'm Frank Vaughn. It's May 15th, 2026, and I know I've been mailing it in for the last couple weeks.
I think where we at? We have done three videos over the last 2 weeks of May. It wasn't really my plan.
But the world is what it is, and my world is what it is, and I've been focused more on myself. I've been focused. This lower body injury, what I call it, it's really just knee issues, plural, both knees. And the problem is the physicality. Need to be more active. Need to be eating right at the right time. Somebody in the comment section mentioned, said, I thought you were doing water fasting, Frank, and I do. I've done up to 8 days before where I just drink water. I've done plenty of 5-day fasts. I've done plenty more 3-day fasts and 24-hour fasts. But if you're not doing the right things in the off time and you're not moving enough, it doesn't do you a lot of good when you're in your mid-40s and you've gone from being very active to being very sedentary. So I'm working on changing these things, but that's not what we're here to talk about. We're here to talk about the world situation. Before we get back to more analytical stuff, I just want to give you my thoughts, because even though I'm not producing videos, there's no getting away from it. It's part of who I am. I'm watching this stuff every day. I'm thinking about this stuff every day. The power went out last night for an hour and a half. My wife and I went to bed early. She passed out right away. And I'm just laying there in the dark. And what am I thinking about? I'm thinking about the world. I could have been thinking about anything. No computers, no devices, no nonsense. What am I thinking about? I'm thinking about the future of the world and what it means for my kids. You know, one of my biggest concerns right now is I'm raising my kids to be decent human beings. And I see other people doing the same thing. And I'm one of the biggest things I'm worried about outside of their long-term survival and outside of the health of and well-being of the world that they're going to live in is whether or not they're going to be able to find nice, normal spouses. The culture in this world is so toxic, especially in North America, especially in the Western world. The closer you get to North America, the more toxic things get. People are lost, man. You know, one of the deep dives I've been doing lately is the whole lolcow content creation bonanza. Like, you get into Wings of Redemption, who I've always known about, but you get into what this guy Jordy and Boogie and all of these people in Keemstar are actually doing right now. It is disgusting. It is the worst form of human being. It makes me want to weep. But I want to talk about the world. Trump just went to China. And the trip, as far as I'm concerned, you know, I watched every element of the trip. From the reception at the airport to the festivities, if you can call them that, that went on, everything was cordial and everything was cold. There wasn't a lot of glad-handing. It was, from the Chinese perspective, it was giving the U.S. president a tour of the future. And Xi's words really communicated that. And I know you've probably, if you're tuned into this at all, you've seen lots of commentary about his reference to Thucydides' dilemma or trap, which is the reigning power being ascended by the rising power and how it generally leads to conflict. We live in a nuclear-armed world. The necessity of avoiding conflict has never been more important. But the warning was clear, and the message was clear. And this is something that Donald Trump knew in 2016. He knew it. And I've been saying this for 10 years. It's been my core thesis. The United States and the unipolar moment passed us by over a decade ago. And in the election of 2016 between Trump and Hillary, you were electing who? The crew of people who would manage the decline. America's star is falling. I love the Republic. I love the Constitution. I love the ideas. But you have to understand the empire has run its course. Now, don't tune out. Stick with me. Because the empire having run its course is not the same thing as the republic having run its course. I've never been dismal on the future of North America. We have resources. We have energy. We have people. We have manpower. We have space. We have living space. All right here. Not being challenged by outsiders. Nobody's threatening to invade. We're here and we're strong. Now, if we just had political leadership that could get it together. Instead, we've got Carney in Canada trying to, you know, with all his money in the United States and all the things I've covered before, you know, I always have in the back of my mind this openness to the idea that he's coordinating with the Trump administration or he's coordinating with American interests. But the facts seem to reveal that he's looking to Europe. He's looking to the World Economic Forum. He's looking to these old structures. And he wants to tie us to them. These faraway, distant lands that are in the midst of sinking. Europe's in a way worse position than we are. They're in a long-term decline, whereas America and North America are in a bit of a short-term decline. Reorganization. Not even necessarily a decline, a necessary reorganization, which I've seen coming for over a decade. There's no stopping the process. And I thought Trump understood this before he got involved in this current administration. Up to this point, it seemed like he understood. Foreign wars were totally unhealthy for the future of the Republic, and that the American empire needed to be drawn down in an orderly fashion to focus on the hemisphere. If you zoom out a little bit, because you have the bird's eye view of North America, but if you zoom out a bit to Western civilization itself, you'll understand that Western civilization has faced its end multiple times over hundreds and hundreds of years and has successfully reorganized and survived. And we're in one of those reorganization phases. Now, Europe's in a bit of trouble. Their reorganization is fraught with peril. They need to figure out that Russia's not their enemy, that Russia is indeed necessary for their reorganizing effort. I don't think they're going to go that way. The politics, just for whatever reason, they just don't seem to understand the wisdom of Russia being in the European family. I've never understood that. For all the history I've ever read, I don't understand why Russia's always been a pariah state. There's always this massive fear the Russians are going to take over Europe, even though Russia's never invaded Europe. But Russia itself has been invaded 6 times by Europe. It's so strange. They have everything the Europeans need. Even during the rise of the National Socialist Party in Germany, the Hitlerians, the Nazis, understood the necessity of Russia. That's why they did so much business with them. That's why they agreed to carve up Poland. And we're not moralizing here. We're just talking about reality. They knew they needed what Russia had, and they either had to get it through diplomacy, which they did at first, or they had to conquer it through warfare, which they tried and failed to do. The necessity, the marriage between Russia and Europe is so necessary for the long-term survival of Europe. But that's not my principal concern. I live in North America. Here I am. And the biggest threat to my prosperity, my future prosperity, to my children's prosperity, is a United States that is dedicated to maintaining an empire that is overstretched and needs to come back home. So back to this trip to China and Xi's reference to Thucydides' dilemma, Thucydides' trap. He's essentially saying, we exist and you exist. You're a big power. And we're a big power. Now you need to understand, and this is the message that was underneath everything he said, you, the United States, you, Donald Trump, you, the U.S. administration, you, the U.S. power elites, need to understand that we exist, we have certain things we demand, we have a sphere of influence, and now we have red lines. One of those red lines is Taiwan. If you interfere with how we handle Taiwan, we're going to go to war with you. That was the very clear message. If you know how reserved the Chinese government is in its public pronunciations and its public statements, if you've been following them for any amount of time, they're very careful, very diplomatic people. They're not warmongering people. They're very careful people, very diplomatic people. They're concerned with doing business. The words that Xi chose were the Chinese equivalent of throwing down a gauntlet and saying, this far, but no further. With the Americans, it's nothing but spin. This whole idea that the United States is winning the war in Iran is delusional. The Strait of Hormuz remains under Iranian control. Tanker traffic is low, way low, because the Iranians control Hormuz. There's not an aircraft carrier parked in the Persian Gulf because you can't put an aircraft carrier in the Persian Gulf right now because it will get destroyed. It's been a bad decision all the way, and it's a terrible decision domestically because it puts enormous pressure on the Republican Party come November. There's a dearth. I shouldn't say a dearth. That's the wrong use of the word. There is an abundance of right-wing media that will tell you everything is fine. I don't think it is. The only asset that the Republicans have is that the Democrats remain ultra-socialist, ultra-left-wing, and unpalatable to many Americans. But it's like, as Lindsey Graham once said about the choice between Ted Cruz and Donald Trump, it's like choosing between being poisoned or shot. It's not much of a choice. That's what independents think. I'm not telling you that that's what I think. I'm not telling you that that's the inevitability. I'm telling you that's what thinking people feel. They don't want a warmongering Republican Party because they didn't vote for that. When they voted for Donald Trump and when they voted in 2024, they voted for anything but what's happening. They didn't vote for the surveillance state. They didn't vote for Palantir. They didn't vote for a renewal of warrantless searches. They didn't vote for a continuance of empire. They didn't vote for a new war and a disaster and the expenses that came with it. They didn't vote for high gas prices. They didn't vote for these things. And you could be a diehard Republican all you want. You can be a diehard MAGA person. Your loyalty, your signaling of loyalty is not going to help you electorally. Only reckoning with reality can help, because reality was what people voted for. The necessary changes and alterations to reality that would make their lives better. That's what they supported in 24. Now they're caught in a bind. Many of the independents think that this presidency is out of control and needs to be reined in. If that means voting for Democrats, I mean, you lost Nick Fuentes. You can say what you want about Nick. Personally, I don't care about the back and forth. There's so much of social media that I think is contrived with the express purpose of shaping public opinion for future that the majority of it I don't pay attention to anyway. I do pay attention to events. And I pay attention to how the Chinese treated Trump. He didn't walk in there to the fanfare that he walked in the first time. This was much more muted. The message was much more clear. And walking away from it, Trump didn't really leave with much of anything. He did. He did go on Truth Social. Well, and this is, okay, so on screen, Putin expected to visit China next week. So this wasn't announced before Trump went. This was announced after he went. So Trump goes, puts his cards on the table, picks up and goes home fairly empty-handed. I mean, there's been some airline deals and an agreement to talk more. There isn't much going on. But in the wake of that, the next day after his plane departs, Putin's going to go to China. The message is so clear. The Russians and the Chinese are coordinating, if it wasn't obvious, through organizations like BRICS, the replacement of the U.S. dollar and its hegemony is imminent. There is a new world order. I know I'm not supposed to use that term, but that's what it is. It's a new world order. And it's going to center on China. And it doesn't have to be the end of the United States. It doesn't have to be the end of North America, but we have to agree that the unipolar moment is gone. And I thought we had that agreement in the embodiment of Donald Trump and what was behind him. Instead, what we got is this neocon nonsense where the Lindsey Grahams and the Marco Rubios hold all the influence over Donald Trump and have guided him, the Netanyahus have guided him into this foolish war in Iran in an attempt to hang on to all of it. And the tighter they squeeze, the more it slips through their fingers. I thought this was understood. I thought this was understood right up into last summer, before even during the 12-day war, the opening salvo of the war, because it's only the first chapter. Thought it was understood. The United States is being checked in real time, and you can pretend that it doesn't mean anything or that it's ineffective and that the United States is still on top of the world. Look, there's so many problems. It's not just the economic catastrophe that is impending. And you say, I'm just being hyperbolic. You can't run the deficits the United States is running. You can't have the consumer debt levels that you have. You can't have the state, let it, like we're talking federal government. At the state level, things get just as bad. It's the same situation here in Canada. You can't do this without consequences, and then you can't open up an expensive war. which I think is going to go hot again. The way that the administration is thinking right now, I don't believe for a second they're going to just walk away. It's what they should do. It's what they really should do. They should just get out, because the only hope for North America is a fixation and a focus on the hemisphere. There's a painful period of reorganization that we cannot avoid. And if we go through this period of reorganization with acceptance of the new world situation, particularly in the old world, which is a long ways away, if we accept that reality, we can reorganize and we can reemerge much stronger in 5 to 10 years' time. We will still be a global anchor, a collective power to be reckoned with. But that idea will die on the rocks if America tries to pretend it still runs the world. And there's a lot of live action role play out there. I know people are going to inevitably post in the comments some names or certain channels which will tell you this is all about the British Empire. It's all about this and it's all about that. It is singularly about the American Empire trying to maintain itself. That's the neocon dream, a new American century where we continue to dominate the world, contain China, which is impossible, contain the Russians, which is impossible. That moment's gone. There is no containment. They have broken out of containment, and if we're not careful, we will lose more than we need to lose. We got a losing hand, folks. I just want to go through Donald Trump's truth feed first. Like, I mean, this. Trump on TikTok, 400 billion all-time views. He's very popular. He's letting you know, look how good I am. This is another one. China has a ballroom, and so should the USA. He's obsessed with this ballroom. Remember the shooting that we're not hearing about anymore? That just kind of came along, and the first thing Trump said was, this is why I need my billion-dollar security ballroom. It's really weird. Things in the United States have gone really weird. You know, it's like, maybe it was always going to end up here. Maybe it was all just rhetoric this entire time. Something has shifted. China has a ballroom, so should the United States. It's under construction ahead of schedule and will be the finest facility of any kind in the world. But this is chasing China. Do you understand the message here? China has it, so we should. It's chasing the rising empire. Look, I've got a statue built to myself. Look at these people. Actually, if we go down a little bit further before he left, you see all these. Pete Ricketts wins. Jim Poulin wins, Mike Hildreth. These are all primaries. This demonstrates Trump's control of the Republican Party. It doesn't demonstrate his dominance of the electorate. And if you look at the reliable approval data, he's in such deep trouble with the electorate. And all of this cannot cover it over. But the thing I want to focus on is Xi very elegantly, this is Trump I'm quoting, President Xi very elegantly, not eloquently, elegantly, referred to the United States as perhaps being a declining nation. There was no perhaps. Trump is adding the perhaps. It was very clear what Xi said. He was referring to the tremendous damage we suffered during the 4 years of Sleepy Joe and the Biden administration. Nope. That's not his vision, Xi's vision. He's the philosopher king of China. Behind closed doors, he's a deep thinker. By all accounts, incorruptible. Now, you could call the entire Chinese regime corrupt. Go ahead. Fine. But Xi himself loves his country and is moving it in a particular direction. There was no perhaps. He identified the long-term decline of the United States. And it's true. By Trump's own admission, the entire concept of make America great again means that it was great at one time, and it's not great now because you have to make it great again. And inevitably, there's going to be people who are upset with me for pointing that out. But it's reality. Infrastructure is crumbling. You can look at Nick Johnson on YouTube or any number, Charlie Boy. There's all these YouTubers that just go and drive around cities, drive around small towns, drive around rural America and show you the destitution, the crumbling. This is why American time and treasure needs to come home and focus on the hemisphere. Because all of the materials, are available and here to rebuild. China is shiny and new. They will have a rebuilding cycle eventually. But that time is not now. President Xi was not referring to the incredible rise that the United States has displayed to the world during the 16 spectacular months of the Trump administration, which includes all-time high stock markets, driven by a few companies while other companies are in decline, a fake paper market that I would not put any stake in right now, which includes all-time high stock markets and 401ks, military victory and thriving relationship in Venezuela, special operation that went very well. I wouldn't call it a thriving relationship. It's a relationship under duress. It's a nation whose regime is intact. One man has been removed in a very well-coordinated operation. They're only cooperating for the time being. When you get a change of administration or you get a change in circumstances, they will abandon you. It's like saying that after Napoleon defeated the Prussians, the alliance system, if you look at maps, shifting maps of Europe during Napoleonic times, you'll see that not only the Austro-Hungarians, but also the Prussians were allies of the French after they were defeated militarily. And then you'll find out as time went on, well, those alliances went away. They flipped, and then they attacked France again. It's a friendship under duress. It's not real. It's not tangible. The military decimation of Iran to be continued, which seems to indicate that if the Iranians don't surrender in the way the United States specifically wants them to, that all of, and this is, it's a collection of treasure and men. It's human capital, and it's real capital, and it's capital that's been turned into physical units of destruction. The best that the U.S. has in the world has been flying into the Middle East since the pseudo-ceasefire was declared. They're collecting the sum total of their force and power. Now, admittedly, they don't have a fourth carrier group there. They haven't done that. But for the first time in history, the United States has military personnel on the ground in Israel and has planes based in Israel. That's like a monumental change and signal to the world of American intent that's never happened before. And it's achieved very little attention, even including me. You know, like maybe I should be talking more about this stuff, but I don't know if people want to listen to it. I really don't. These are some of the most hardcore realities that I've ever presented on this channel. And the viewership is in decline. And it's like, it doesn't make the information less apt. It doesn't make the information less timely. It doesn't make it less factual. But it's like people don't want it. But it's all I want to give you. If I'm going to give you anything at all. Like, that's the other thing I've noticed over the last couple of weeks is I've been kind of slow in my production here. I don't have the ego or the narcissism to just want to keep driving. I keep seeing content come out every single day that spins things in a one party or another vein of thought. It's like, it's pro-liberal content, it's pro-conservative content. There can be no criticism of the party of choice. I saw a piece of content this morning about C-22 that pretends that the United States doesn't have the equivalent surveillance state. The guy who did it gets all kinds of views. People love clicking on his headlines because, man, he's a narrative producer. Everybody wants a good story. They want a hero and they want a clearly defined villain. And in this case, Trump's the hero and Carney's the villain and Canada's doing something that the United States doesn't do. Meanwhile, the United States has the TSA. They have Palantir. They have FISA, warrantless surveillance. They're already looking at your phones. They're already doing metadata collection. They're doing all this stuff, and Trump might have been elected to stop it, but he ain't. I don't have the ingredients in my personality to just want to chase success in social media or in YouTube. I just want to tell the truth as best as I can find it. And the truth in this situation is the United States is not in a strong position in the world right now. Its resources are stretched thin and to the limits of the earth, and they desperately need to come home because the home front needs the attention. North America needs the attention. The hemisphere needs the attention. And the quid pro quo on the table right now, somehow still, and this is something else I got out of the Chinese visit, is that if the Americans are smart enough and wise enough to have the vision to allow China to exist in its sphere of influence and interest, well, they'll probably sign off on the United States existing within its sphere, which is North America. They don't really care as long as they can still buy the products that they need from this hemisphere. They don't really care so long as whoever's sitting on top of the continental system is still willing to do business with China. And I believe that's going to continue. The relationship between the Asian world and the North American world, and to a greater or to a lesser extent, the European world. I don't really think about Europe. It doesn't really factor into my thinking. They're doing their own thing over here. We have our own problems, pressing needs. It's the same when we talk about refugees from Palestine or Syria or Afghanistan or any other number of countries that we have to help. And Nigerians, we got to bring them in. We got to bring all these people. And we're just piling people into a problem. We got a lot of problems here, man. It's outside the scope of this video. To sum it all up, what needs to happen is America needs to admit defeat in the Middle East before it expends the rest of its resources. Like I was saying, it's bringing all of its advanced and less advanced munitions from all over the world, building up for one final showdown in their minds with the Iranians. They will hit them so hard they will have to surrender. They will not. They will not. And at the expense and expenditure of lives and treasure, they're going to emerge on the other side of it even more recalcitrant than they are today. That's the only thing the Americans can win here, is a worse deal for themselves. You know, I hate to be somebody that would... Like, a broken clock is right twice a day. And Obama said something the other day, which really hit home. Something I've seldom ever talked about on my channel is the Iranian nuclear deal and the JCPOA. I always thought, and this is where I'm guilty. Sometimes even in the past, I've played politics where there's certain things I just won't talk about because it just doesn't seem... It doesn't seem worth it, or just it detracts from other things I'd like to see done. But the JCPOA, there's two talking points. One is it guaranteed that the Iranians would eventually get a nuclear weapons. It didn't do that. It actually set up the circumstances to make sure they didn't get it. Now, sure, the JCPOA would expire at some point, but the Iranians were fully compliant with it until Trump kicked them out of that deal, canceled that deal in 2018. Up to that point, they were fully compliant. And when that renegotiation came up, considering before this chapter of the war began, before the second chapter, which we're now waiting for the third chapter, the Iranians agreed through the Omani mediator to surrender everything without a single bomb having to fall. That's what they gave the Americans. They would have done that if the JCPOA had continued. They wanted a civilian nuclear program. It is their right. Now, Trump kicked them out, and they made a mistake. They enriched to 60% to protest, to send a signal to the world that they could, at any time they wanted to, they could develop a nuclear weapon, which they may be inclined to do now. If the JCPOA had have continued, there's every reasonable reason to think that they would have renegotiated and agreed to give up whatever was left on the table. They even agreed to allow American inspectors in, according to the Omani mediator, which both sides agreed to before the bombs started falling. And then the other talking point was the money. Well, the money was frozen Iranian assets, the pallets of cash, frozen Iranian assets that were paid back. My concern is that for all the time and treasure that's going to go into this, it would have been cheaper to just keep that thing. And so Obama said, if we were just going to end up back at the JCPOA, we didn't have to kill a bunch of people to get there. It's actually quite true. Because at the moment, the Americans are in a position, the Trump administration has put the United States in a position where the only deal they're going to get out of Iran is a worse one compared to the status quo that existed before and compared to the framework that existed during Trump's first term. Now, at the time, I just dismissed it. I didn't even want to talk about it. Thought it was foolish then, but there was a lot more going on in the world. And at that point, the resurgence of the United States, its battle of the Imperial Bulge, was underway under the Trump administration. It's not the same now. Time has gone by and the American position in the world is much weaker. And there's a lot of people out there who are going to blow smoke up your backside saying the American position in the world has never been stronger, including the president right here in this nonsense that he writes, reframing Xi as though we can't just listen to what he said ourselves. The gauntlet's been thrown down. The message is very clear. If the American empire tries to keep asserting itself on the world stage in to the same degree that it did in the 90s and the aughties, it will be met by conflict, a conflict that will leave it in ruins and probably most of the world at the same time. And there's no reason for it. Because North America needing attention, if it gets that attention, will emerge stronger and will be an anchor in this new multipolar world where everybody can prosper, everybody can get rich, we can all do well together, and we don't have to have the great big third world war, which we seem to be barreling towards. Now, I mean, the only silver lining is the United States has done so bad in Iran that almost nobody wants to fight them directly. They're burying themselves in the Zagros Mountains. There's going to be people in the comment section who think that's just delusional. Well, just go on, keep thinking that. I don't know how much more you need. I made some very set predictions before this war began and at the beginning of the war. And here we are. I've done very well. Trump has done very poorly. His thesis, his prognostications have been full of shit. And so has the social media that tells you this is some grand Machiavellian plan and that Trump is sitting atop the world. Delusional. That doesn't make me a left-winger. Doesn't make me a Democrat. Doesn't mean I'm going to start trans-identifying. It just is what it is. And the world is happy. The adversaries, the rivals of the United States are satisfied to watch this process playing out. And we got the ticking time bomb of oil. We just paid the other day $1.90. This is the cheap gas, man. The only place that's cheaper is in Alberta. Sometimes. It's not always cheaper there, I've learned. But I live where the gas is cheapest in Canada. I don't know what they're paying in Ontario or BC. It's a hell of a lot more. In the United States, $10 a gallon is on the table, folks. I don't care what the prices do on a daily basis. I care about trajectory and reality. The United States is exporting oil at a fever pace to try and plug the hole they've made with the Iranian war in the market, to try and keep prices low for domestic political reasons. It would have been so much more simple to just not do the war. If you were trying to save the Republican Party in the midterms, you just didn't have to, you just don't go to war. That's what you do. Israel says, well, we're going to bomb them anyway. Let them. Let the Israelis fight the entire Middle East and let them suffer the consequences for that. The Western world, because of what happened in World War II, is not responsible in perpetuity for the protection of the Israeli state so that they can go and commit ethnic cleansing in Lebanon and Gaza and everywhere else in the Middle East. They're doing horrible things to human beings, to children, to women, to people. Evicting millions of people from their homes and never allowing them to return, bombing them out of existence, killing journalists. They're engaged in a mass murder campaign. We're not obliged. Whether you're an atheist or you're a godly Christian person, you're not obliged to enable a political state to go about murdering tens of thousands of people on an ongoing basis. Let them fight it out. We have enough problems of our own right here in North America to deal with. That strategic reserve of oil is in decline, exporting more than can be taken in. You can't plug the hole forever, and we're running out of runway on that. And when I say we're running out of runway, I mean weeks. weeks before the meteoric rise in oil prices, before the real consequences manifest themselves. And meanwhile, the quagmire carries on. And I don't think the Trump administration is smart enough, or it just lacks the political will to do what's necessary, and that is to walk away and take the L and accept the consequences. There is no undoing what's already been done. The only thing you can do is save a worse outcome in the future. That's it. That's the only thing you can take away from the table now is a leaving of cards. It's a loss. A renewal of confrontation will only lead to further loss and, at the same time, leave very expensive, technically sophisticated, big, bulky, pricey American munitions in desperately short supply that cannot be easily restored. So the United States' ability, Trump keeps saying, we got the strongest military on earth. You're out of ammo, bro. You can't fight a war against Russia and China conventionally. You got the big red button, but you're draining all of your resources in Iran in a losing war. It's a losing war. I don't know how people don't understand this at this point. Unless they're just drinking all the propagandic milk that comes from the administration, it's delusional. It's bad news all day out of Iran. We got to get out. And when I say we, as a member of North America, this affects me. Even living up here in Canada, it affects me, especially when you consider, you know, I remember the Trump administration was talking about Canada as the 51st state and had all these plans. Have you noticed that's just disappeared off the radar? There's no talk about that anymore. We're about to face the renegotiation of the USMCA. I mean, it's impending. It should be happening right now, and there's everybody's mum on it. The Canadian media is not really talking about it. The American media is not talking about it. Donald Trump doesn't talk about Canada anymore. Carney's doing his thing. It's like all of these things together are all collective signals that not all is well with the Trump administration. And I just think that if you really care about that administration, you need to be telling them the hard news, which is you made a big, big mistake. It's okay. We make mistakes. This one's a pretty terrible one because it involves the mass murder of a lot of different people. We focus on the girls' school, which is absolutely horrific to do a double tap strike on a freaking school, which means you to do a double tap strike on a school, you had to have eyes in the air. You knew exactly what you were hitting. Past the first missile, you probably knew what you were hitting with the first one. But when you've got ordnance circling in the sky, waiting for everybody to come in before you hit them again, you knew exactly what you were doing. It's murder, and that's just a small part of a bigger murder campaign. And you don't have to like it. You don't have to tune in. You don't have to watch me. But it is what it is. And I am watching the vision of Fortress North America go up in smoke. And I find that to be a very great tragedy.